from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco and live from our studios in Sacramento, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, on the 1st of July, at the height of the summer camping and hiking season, dozens of state parks are slated to close due to budget cuts. But park supporters and politicians are scrambling to keep many sites open through partnerships, corporate sponsorships, and other fundraising efforts. We'll get the latest on the unprecedented closings, and we want to hear from you. Is one of your local parks shutting its gates, and what will it mean for your community? Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco and live from our studios in Sacramento, I'm Michael Krasny. Welcome to this hour of the Forum program. Dozens of California state parks are slated to close their doors in 3 weeks because of budget cuts. A year ago, the State Department of Parks and Recreation released a list of 70 parks that would have to shut their doors no later than the 1st of July to save $22 million. Supporters are working to keep the parks open. A number of them, in fact, have probably fallen off the list of 70 and will not close, but many likely will. And in this forum hour, we want to focus on the state parks and their sustainability. And joining us for the hour here in studio is Ruth Coleman, Director of California State Parks. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have you. Also good to have Joe Simidian, State Senator. And Joe Simidian has a sustainable parks proposal, currently part of the budget package. Welcome, Senator. Good to have you.
Thanks so much.
Also with us in studio this hour is Tracy Virardo-Torres, who is Vice President for Government Affairs with the California State Parks Foundation. Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you all here. And Ruth Coleman, let me begin with you. We ought to say, first of all, that I want to get the real picture from you, but things have changed. And they've changed largely because local groups are rallying and volunteers are coming to the fore. Local communities, partnerships, there's one up in Napa, for example, I know that's been really quite successful. Where are we now? Are we down to, well, how many out of the 70?
Well, as of right now, we have 30 parks that we have achieved some partnership, and we've signed agreements with different groups, either federal, state, or local agencies, or nonprofits, and in some case, private sector. And we have about 25 other agreements that are currently in the works. So we have about 15 parks that are looking really, really threatened. And so that's kind of the status right now. I can't say that all 25 of the programs we're still working on will be successful, but we do have 30 that we can announce are actually now not going to close. But I do want to emphasize this is a reprieve from this from the closure. It's not really a save because all of these agreements we're doing are temporary in nature. And
you still have deferred maintenance. You still have long term and everything along those lines to worry about. But it looks a lot better than it did a number of months ago, obviously.
It's a real testament to the creativity of the park staff, their willingness to work outside of the box. The legislature has helped us enormously by giving us some new new authority as of this January to work with nonprofits. It is also a tremendous testimony to the nonprofit partners and private donors and other federal agencies like the National Park Service. So I think all these different groups have been coming together to try to ensure that these parks receive some level of attention so that they don't just deteriorate beyond repair.
So before July 1st, you're still, it's safe to say, looking actively for partners and also looking for donors and the like to keep these 15 open?
Absolutely. We're going to continue looking as long as we possibly can to infuse some level of human energy into every one of these parks. And I think it's been remarkably successful. It's a challenge, but it's really, it's energizing to all of us to see this kind of creativity.
No, I think it's terrific. There is a sense, though, of concern about, well, nonprofits taking, in fact, there are some on the Republican side who are saying maybe for-profits should be taking over parks. We'll perhaps talk about that. But those who will be operating the parks or managing the parks not having the expertise, paying checks, getting insurance, I mean, these are big questions, aren't they?
Absolutely. We are really experimenting in California, and we are going to be exploring sort of new pathways. The insurance issue is a real one for a lot of nonprofits. Some of these nonprofits are having to expand greatly from their original purpose. A lot of these are friends groups that had fairly narrow roles to play, and now they're going to have pretty extensive roles to play. And so it's going to require a tremendous amount of partnering and working together. And in all these parks, we are continuing to retain our stewardship and trustee role. So we're not abandoning these parks, but our ability to manage them has been greatly curtailed by the budget cuts.
Well, what about privatization? Is that really not up for grabs? I know in Nevada they have logos of corporations in parks. They have vending machines in parks. There are all kinds of ways that they've created revenue streams.
A privatization is kind of an interesting loaded term. It means different things to different people. In California today, we have almost 200 concession agreements with private sector. So restaurants are provided by the private sector in our state parks. We have conference centers like Asilomar is run by the private sector. Mm-hmm. But this doesn't translate into corporate logos in the parks. It just means that the private sector is doing what they do well. And government isn't necessarily so good at running a restaurant, so we don't run restaurants. And so we are looking at some requests for proposals that we have signed to have the private sector run some campgrounds in some of our parks. But we will continue to do the natural and cultural resource protection. But the campground itself is an operation that the private sector does in many, many places. About 90,000 campsites in California today are run by the private sector. We have 15,000 that in the past had been run by state park workers. Now a few of them will be run by the private sector. But I don't see that is, in essence, turning the park over to a private entity. It's just the campground operation they're going to run as a concession.
Well, there are concession contracts. There's one right here in Brandon Island near where we're talking from the Sacramento.
That's right. We're going to be doing it at Brandon Island. You know, we do things like kayak concessions. That isn't privatizing the park. It's providing a value service to the public that is being offered by the private sector.
Again, Ruth Coleman with us in studio, Director of California State Parks, and we are coming to you live from Sacramento. Tell us what it means to close a park. I mean, there's been a great deal of concern, for example, that they're going to be closed, but they're still going to be, in a sense, open or accessible. There's possibility of vandalism and all these kinds of problems attendant upon that, aren't there?
Absolutely. This is a new path for us. We've never closed parks in our history. The park right now that has been closed is Providence Mountain. And what we've done there is the National Park Service has put a trailer on a pad, and a National Park employee is staying inside that park. So it is not abandoned. There is caretaker status there. And then there's a gate that keeps the cars from coming in. And it's actually so remote that it would be very difficult for anybody to enter in without somebody observing it. And so we do have a lot of security measures we've put in. But that it's still always going to be a challenge on large-scale landscapes, which is why it's so important that we try to find
challenge
partners.
With particularly things like injury lawsuits or wildfires.
The lawsuit problem isn't such a challenge for us because we do have some immunities, but I'm more concerned about vandalism and things like marijuana growing. That's a problem now. It could be much worse. And so I do think vandalism and, you know, generally if you've seen a foreclosed home, if you don't put human energy and money into a resource, it does deteriorate over time. And so we shouldn't kid ourselves that this is all just going to be fine. On the other hand, I think that the news we're giving is that there is a lot of energy going in to try to figure out some solutions.
And again, Ruth Coleman is Director of California State Parks. Joe Simidian is State Senator, Democrat from Palo Alto, who has a sustainable parks proposal currently part of the budget package, the budget which we spent a whole first hour talking about. And this budget proposal you have, Senator Simidian, it's to sustain the parks. Really.
Well, that's right. Part of the challenge that parks has had over these last few years, and it's been a frustration to the public as well, is that we've sort of lurched from crisis year to crisis year to crisis year. And the notion that my colleague Noreen Evans, Senator Noreen Evans, and I came up with in putting this package
together. Santa Rosa representative.
Santa Rosa representative, that's right. And a lot of, actually, I should just mention, a lot of Northern California energy on this. Mark Leno, the chair of the Budget Committee, has been very supportive. Jared Huffman over in the State Assembly has carried legislation. I think, you know, we're all folks who both have benefited from parks in our region and also know how much folks in our region value those parks. But the goal this year was to say, look, can't we get something in place that is sustainable over the long haul? And to sort of oversimplify that a little bit, it has three pieces. The first is to stabilize and then build on these partnerships that Ruth was talking about. California State Parks Foundation has just done a wonderful job. And working with them and these local partners around the state, there's a lot we can do, I think. The second is to think about new ways of working at state parks. And some of that's already begun, as Ruth could tell you. But, you know, for better or worse, and I would argue mostly for the worse, the world isn't what it was 10 or 20 years ago, certainly not in terms of revenues available to support parks. And that means that the parks organization is going to have to change the way it does its job.
They support the parks, but I had alluded to deferred maintenance. Extraordinary sum.
Yeah, and that number is in excess of $1 billion as we sit here today. That's a lot of items on the to-do list, to put it bluntly. So let's build these partnerships. Let's find new ways of working. And then last, the third piece is let's find some money to actually solve the problem.
Which means new revenue streams?
Well, it means, I think, for the foreseeable future, borrowing some money in most cases or taking some money from other funds that are appropriate. So we've got actually, Michael, it's an extraordinarily small amount that is sort of the nut we have to crack. $22 million is the number we were told by the administration we needed if we didn't want to see these parks closures. Now, in a general fund budget of $90 billion, that is a small amount.
I'll give you a figure from George Skelton in the LA Times. He says that's 1/714 of the deficit hole.
Exactly. Or another way to put it is it's 60 cents per Californian. Do we really want to close 25% of the state parks in California because we're short 60 cents a Californian? I don't think most people think that's a particularly well-conceived notion. And so if you can rely on those partners from the foundation and donor world, if you can change the way you do the work, if you can find just a little bit of money, if you pull all of that together, some of it is, there's not one silver bullet. I wish there were an easy, quick fix, but shouldn't there be a parks license plate to raise revenue? Shouldn't we have a checkoff box? We've got some clean water funding money that could be used at the park so that we're not dipping into their resources in order to do that kind of work. We've got some roads money that could be used appropriately since they were vehicle registration fees. Well, guess what? Money that could be spent on roads could be spent on roads in parks. Let's use that money so that we're not closing 70 state parks out of 280. And you alluded to it. I think apart from the fact, I don't see this as a cost savings. People say we're going to save $22 million. Putting aside the fact that that's a modest amount of money given the loss of 70 state parks, a single forest fire or a lawsuit and all of a sudden your savings are wiped out by just an incident or two. Apart from the vandalism, the potential for crime, important to remember, these are economic development opportunities up and down the state. A lot of the places these parks are places that are struggling to make ends meet financially. The jobs that go with hospitality and tourism, which is a major industry here in California, these parks get abandoned. Those jobs are gone as well. So it's not just, penny-wise and pound-foolish on the money front. It is really, I think, a big step backward in terms of California's hospitality and tourism industry at a time when we can ill afford it.
Haven't you been suggesting, though, or with this bill, the possibility of using non-rangers in the parks, which would take rangers out of the employ they're presently in?
Well, if you close 70 state parks, a quarter of the system, that's a lot of rangers who are unemployed. And so I think the wiser course is to say, aren't there routine daily tasks for which lower paid folks can do the work and we're not using the incredible talent that rangers bring and the expertise and experience that they have for what are essentially day-to-day tasks at the park? And my understanding is that Parks has already begun doing some of that. I think there's probably the potential to do more. And again, this is what I call new ways of working. If we stay stuck in the old ways of doing business, one day we'll wake up and discover that 70 state parks have a close sign on them, and I don't think anybody thinks that's a good idea.
Talking to Senator Joe Simitian and his sustainable parks proposal, currently part of the budget practice. You also, Senator Simitian, alluded to Jared Huffman, Assemblyman, actually now in the congressional race, and others who are putting bills forward. And I just wanted to make listeners aware of the fact that talking about different revenue streams has brought into ideas of surplus highway funds, as I think you alluded to, vehicle licensing revenue, but also putting, and Ruth Coleman mentioned this from the state perspective, but nonprofit immunity, that is for liability for nonprofits who might be managing parks.
And I think what
a possible bill as well.
Well, I think what Ruth will, and this is part of our sustainable parks proposal, and part of the reason that we're trying to do this through the budget process is because we're going to have a budget before that July 1 deadline that Ruth and the Parks Department is looking at. But one of the things that I'm worried about is I think once you close the doors, it becomes very hard to reopen that park. So we want to try and stave off as many of those closures as we can, give the folks at Parks both the tools and the resources to stave off those closures. So I'm hoping that the day after the budget or the week after the budget is passed, we'll hear from Ruth and the folks at Parks that that number is an even smaller number than she hopes or anticipates, I guess I should say, today. And that liability issue is one where I think if we're going to attract nonprofits who in many times are struggling to make ends meet themselves, we're going to have to make them feel comfortable, you know, obviously within limits, but we're going to have to make them feel comfortable that they're not going to suddenly be subjected to great liability for trying to roll up their sleeves and do a good thing.
Should we also mention that the Motor Vehicle Fund has a $500 million reserve?
It does, and this was one of those sort of serendipitous moments in the budget process where you know, because the little budget subcommittee that is one of my that I chair is one of my responsibilities. It used to be an obscure budget subcommittee until parks and high speed rail were both part of the conversation. But you know, we said, wait a minute, that's money that is there from our motor vehicle registration fees for road construction, repair, maintenance, and law enforcement. The folks in 70 state parks that we're talking about have road construction, maintenance, and repair, and law enforcement duties. Why don't we appropriately use some of that funding? Whether it turns out quite that way remains to be seen in the next 48 hours. As you know, everybody has their eye on every pot of money in California, particularly during tough times. But the notion was, let's cobble it together in a way that we think will last for at least a few years and allow some of these new ways of working to take hold. It's going to take time to move this organization. I mean, it's a 1.4 million acre operation. And, you know, back to the closure issue, you really just can't throw a chain link fence up around 1.4 million acres or even a quarter of that. It's also a large organization with a deep history and tradition. You know, Ms. Coleman has her work cut out for her, frankly, in terms of changing the organizational culture a little bit to accommodate these tough new times.
I can see what's weighing down her shoulders right here in the studio here. Senator Joe, State Senator Joe Simidian with us in studio, Democrat from Palo Alto, who has put forward a sustainable parks proposal, currently part of the budget practice. And also with us in studio here in Sacramento is Tracy Virardo Torres, who's Vice President for Government Affairs with the California State Parks Foundation. And Ms. Virardo Torres, at this point, let's talk about what the legislation, there's been a lot of it here, and you're pretty much supporting most of these legislative bills?
We are, and certainly we're very supportive of the budget package, as intact or not intact as it may end up in the next 48 hours. I do want to mention, you know, on behalf of the nonprofit community, the liability issue that we raised is an important one. And just as a real-world example, we have two nonprofits that are right now pursuing these relationships with the state to try to manage state parks who have had their insurance canceled by their carriers, saying this is a huge undertaking that you're taking on. And still the nonprofits want to persist. So this is, you know, critically important. And it is important to remember that although these nonprofits, as Director Coleman said, you know, this is a big leap for many of them, behind many of these nonprofits are very skilled and experienced people who have expertise to bring that, yes, it's not the culture that has traditionally been brought to state parks, but it is a value. And so, for example, we've got one nonprofit where on the board you've got the former CEO of a Fortune 500 company. Out in Benicia, you've got the leader of that effort, 30-year practice in doing environmental management and environmental studies. You've got down in Southern California, people who have run community college systems. So you have in this nonprofit environment, people stepping forward, not just out of the goodness of their heart, but because they have skills and experiences to bring.
Skills and experiences, but running a park is in some ways a pretty distinctive operation.
It is, and that's why we at the foundation are trying to provide a lot of support to these organizations and drawing on some of the best practices that exist both at the public sector level in terms of what the department has done, but looking outside at other conservancies, other national nonprofits that do management of open space and public lands for public access. There are models out there that can be instructive to people in a time when we're all building new models here.
So you're coordinating a lot of park advocacy. How are you doing that? Is that grassroots?
Absolutely. So throughout the network of nonprofit organizations, whether they're trying to run a park or not, all nonprofit organizations that are attached to parks are very much following both the budget and the legislation that's moving forward. The Huffman bill has a lot of pieces. Some are very similar to what's in the budget package, but some also look forward at these new revenue ideas that are squarely going to put all of us in California in the driver's seat of figuring out what do we want in parks and what are we going to be willing to
pay for? So we're talking long term.
We're absolutely talking long term.
And you're awarding grants too?
We have. We at the organization, at the State Parks Foundation, just awarded a little over $330,000 to 13 organizations who are in this hot seat of keeping parks open. We were pleased to have funding from the philanthropic sector, from the Bechtel Foundation and the Thomas J. Long Foundation. And so our role here is we want to provide the technical assistance and guidance. We've got legal help help for nonprofits. We've got operations planning and business planning. We've got money in some cases. And we are certainly out there looking on the philanthropic and corporate side for other ways to bring people to the table to bring money.
Well, since we have a large listenership, in fact, it always both surprises and, I must confess, delights me sometimes when people come on and they tell me afterward, well, we had a donor who stepped up to the plate. And I'm just wondering about what you say in terms of saving the state parks. I mean, we all know the value of them, recreation and, you know, taking advantage of them in terms of just great places to relax and see nature and commune with nature and all the rest of it. But it's also closing parks is bad for business.
Closing parks is bad for business. And we have been working with, as the senator alluded to, the travel and the tourism sector for quite some time because they really see this as part of their bread and butter, too. State parks, in a study done actually by the department last year, the state park system produces over $6 billion annually in benefit, economic benefit to the state from not just all of us paying our fees when we get there, but the gas it takes us to get there, the gifts we buy in the souvenir shops outside the park, the ice cream at the deli. And that adds up to a significant amount here. It supports 56,000
jobs. A lot more
jobs.
Significant than $22 million.
It does. It does, both in state and local tax proceeds. So the business sector really sees themselves as having a clear role, and particularly the tourism sector.
Tracy Verano-Torres, again, is Vice President for Government Affairs with the California State Parks Foundation. I want to give out the phone number and find out not only about your concern, those of you listening where the state parks are concerned, you may, in fact, want to address your concern in your own community and how the state parks serve you in terms of your own life and in terms of the lives of those whom you love. Our toll-free number is available, and we do welcome your participation in this program. 866-733-6786 is the number to reach us at. And again, we'd like to hear from you. Join this conversation toll-free, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. And I'm looking at some emails here. Here's Eric, who writes, many other states have a bifurcated fee system for their state parks. I know Wisconsin and Utah do. Out-of-state visitors pay a higher park fee than residents pay. This seems a no-brainer. Why isn't California implementing this? Ruth Coleman?
It's a good question. We haven't got enough people in our kiosks right now to make a distinction of the license plate, which is driving in. But we are looking at all kinds of creative ways to increase revenues, but not necessarily by always just increasing the price. For example, in San Diego County, we've now hired a contractor who is collecting all the revenues. They've put in a lot more pay machines that accept credit cards, and we're starting to charge hourly rates because a lot of people, when they're coming to the beach, just want to stop for a couple hours as opposed to stay for the whole day. So that way, we actually end up earning more revenue, but from the individual's perspective, it isn't more expensive. So I think there's all kinds of creative things that we can be looking into. It does require you have somebody actually at the kiosk to meet the person if you're going to try to make a distinction between who's in state and who's out of state.
Again, Ruth Coleman here with us in studio as director of the California State Parks. We're coming to you live from Sacramento. And Senator Simidian, Christy O says, I'm hoping more is covered on ranger staff at closing parks. Give us a picture of what we're this was came to us on Twitter, in fact, what we're talking about here. I mean, you're getting some blowback from the rangers representatives, unions?
I haven't. Ruth may have a different experience. Quite the opposite. The folks in the world of our rangers have said, let's go to it and try and avoid the closure of those 70 state parks. As I said earlier, I think a decade ago, we might have gotten some pushback about work being, quote, taken away from rangers. When you change the conversation and you have a serious conversation about, are we going to lose rangers at 70 state parks, a quarter of the total system, or are we going to use those very trained, very experienced, tremendously talented rangers for things that rangers can appropriately do and only rangers can appropriately do, and use lower paid staff in order to keep those 70 state parks open and thereby provide 70 state parks where rangers can be working. I think apart from the fact that it's just a smart way to use a group of talented people, I think they understand that that's actually in their own economic interest.
All right. Again, we're talking about the state parks. Feel free to join the program. It's toll free at 866-733-6786 or email us, forum@kqed.org. With Ruth Coleman, Joe Simidian, and Tracy Verano-Torres, I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. On July 1st, at the height of the summer camping and hiking season, dozens of state parks are slated to close due to budget cuts. But park supporters and politicians are scrambling to keep many sites open through partnerships, corporate sponsorships, and other fundraising efforts. And we're getting the latest on the unprecedented closings. And we want to hear from you. Is one of your local parks shutting its gates? And what will it mean for your community? You can join us at our toll-free number, which is 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. And with us here in our Sacramento studio is Ruth Coleman, who is director of the California State Parks, and Tracy Virardo-Torres, who is vice president for government affairs for the California State Parks Foundation, and State Senator Joe Simidian, Democrat from Palo Alto, who has put forward a sustainable parks proposal, currently part of the budget package. And Senator Simidian, you were saying off air that there's really an important part of the piece here that listeners need to know about.
Well, it's just that the great tragedy of the impending park closures, if we can't avert them, is it comes at a time when there is an even greater need for affordable recreation for California families. And, you know, when you've got a recession like this, people don't have as much money in their pockets. And candidly, tensions are high. People are struggling. If ever there was a need for an affordable, family-friendly place for people to go, it's now. So the notion that you would say at the time of greatest need, we're going to have to cut back on those opportunities. I grew up as a kid in California. My father was a school teacher. We were a one-income household. And I have great memories of going to Big Basin, visiting New Brighton State Beach Park, even as a kid in the afternoon. If I didn't have any money in my pocket, four or five of us pile into somebody's car and make our way up to Castle Rock and go rock climbing for the afternoon. All of that was, if not free, pretty darn close. And, we're at risk of losing those opportunities for families.
Chris, when you say, if not free, pretty darn close, I'm looking at an email here from a listener named Elizabeth. It says, why don't all parks charge fees? We love our parks, he says, and our State Parks Foundation members. We were shocked to visit McCarrotrip State Park at Fort Bragg over Memorial Day weekend and not be charged a fee, even though there was a manned kiosk at the entrance with a helpful ranger present, I might add. Why not even a modest $5 fee? No wonder there are budget problems.
I guess I have to jump in on that one. Yeah. We charge fees, a variety of different fees, and we're starting to increase them in some places. Sonoma Coast is one place that we're looking to charge, which we never have in the past. And as you move up the Northern California coast, if you go to Southern California, it's $15 to park your car. We always charge a parking fee. We don't charge for people to walk in. So there is a distinction there. And I think Senator Simidian's right, is that the tension is how do we keep these public lands affordable for the public while our budget's dropping? All listeners should understand, back when Governor Brown was governor the first time in 79, 91% of our budget came from general purpose taxes. And as of this July, it'll be 29%. So there's been this complete shift in how we're funded through this generation, sort of bookended by Governor Brown's tenure as governor. And he wasn't there during that interim that when it happened, but here we are. And so now we really do have to earn a much higher portion of our revenues. And one of the ways we try to do it also is providing more value. A lot of people can't afford an RV, but they're not interested in sleeping on the ground. And so we're looking to provide more cabins that are affordable. They might cost a little more than a tent site, but it allows us to bring in more people than who otherwise might come. So there's a lot of different ways we can try to sort of thread this needle.
Well, as many of our listeners know, KQED's California Report has done an extensive series called State Parks on the Rocks. Host Rachel Miro joins us to talk about what they found in the reporting. And Rachel, welcome, first of all. Glad to have you. Do we have Rachel Miro?
Glad to be here.
Oh, there you are. Okay. A little more than a seven-second delay. You talk to a lot of people about what's going on in the parks. Can you give us a sense of what's happening at state parks now from your perspective?
Well, one of the things I've been thinking listening to this conversation is that it's not as if July 1st is going to roll around and you're suddenly going to hear the clinking all over the state of giant gates slamming shut. There's been a long, slow slide into closure for many of the parks. One of the people that we talked to for the series, a blogger named Lucy DeMott on the eastern side of the
state.
She's
the lady who decided to go to every single one of the 70 parks.
She went to every one of the 70 parks at risk. And what she found at a lot of them were that they were already keeping bankers' hours.
Benicia State Capitol was supposed to be open on the day I went, but because they were short-staffed and had only one ranger manning several nearby parks, there was no one there right when I was there. And there was about a dozen people who didn't get to go in and see it that day.
It creates the situation where, you know, it's not so much that you have rangers, you know, sitting there for 12 hours at a stretch playing solitaire waiting for people to come up with tickets. These guys are driving all over the place, sometimes responsible for several parks at the same time. And, you know, one of the perverse positives, if you will, of the fact that we're talking about this now, that there's all of this, all of these negative headlines about parks closing, is that people are actually hearing about parks in their local areas that are at risk.
People don't
of course,
know
a lot of people still don't know the risks.
So if they go away, do we care?
A lot of people don't know the risk. They don't know that the park is there, as we just kind of heard Lucy say. You know, a lot of people don't know. If you don't know it's there, you don't care. And it raises the question, you know, how do we get the word out that we have these resources that we do?
Well, of course, this is a system that's been underfunded for years, and one has to ask, and I'll ask you, Rachel, if you get volunteers who are stepping up to take the roles that the state used to take, is that going to be enough? Can you get away with less state involvement by having community volunteers and donors and the like?
I would argue that there's a limit to what volunteers can do as it is. Just a few months ago, I went down to Anza Borrega, you know, the biggest state park in Southern California. Gorgeous. You go into the gift shop and you see elderly volunteers working there. The ranger is not there. He's busy doing other stuff. I should say she's busy doing other stuff. Who knows? There is a limit to what somebody who is not a sworn peace officer can do. You can't ask somebody like that to go up to drunk, rowdy people who, you know, might have weapons on hand, having an argument at a campground and tell them to stop being so rowdy.
Rachel Miro is host and reporter of the California Report, and you can find a link to the California Report series on state parks, closures on the rocks at our website, kqed.org/forum. Rachel, thank you so much, and thank you for all the good work you've done on this.
Thank you.
We're going to go to your calls here in just a moment. I want to go first to a couple of comments that came through. Alexander writes, closing parks definitely impacts climbers. Outside of a gym, it's the only option for bouldering. It also makes a great cheap vacation destination for those who can't always afford far-off vacations. And Lorna writes, what is the long-term outlook for closed parks? As a biologist, it sounds to me like as long as they're not sold, this could be good for wildlife. However, given poaching and a lack of conservation management, I could be wrong. How will the closures impact natural plant and animal populations? Ruth Coleman?
We have a lot of concerns with closed parks and the natural resources because you can get a lot of invasion of non-native species, and we spend a lot of time and money trying to keep non-native species at bay. And if a plant takes over, it can really eradicate a lot of the habitat value. So I think it's a myth that simply keeping people out would somehow protect all of these parks. I think it requires that we constantly steward these resources.
Joe Smitty.
Well, and I think Rachel Miro's point deserves to be underscored, which is it's not, as she says, it's not as if there'll be a dramatic moment, perhaps, on July the 1st. This steady decline that she talked about is directly connected to the long-term lack of funding. The deferred maintenance is the way all of us, whether we're the state park system or a small business or a family, deal with the fact that we don't have the dollars year after year after year to keep reinvesting. And so whether it is your business infrastructure or the outside of your front porch at home or the California state parks, you think you can get away with it for a year or two or three. And then in the case of parks, you look over your shoulder and say, we've got $1.2 billion in deferred maintenance. You know, simply put, that means in too many cases, we've let our parks go to hell in a handbasket because the investment wasn't there over time. And I think this year is the tipping point. I think, you know, we had two different administrations, the Brown administration and the Schwarzenegger administration, who were both on this path. And in fairness, they're both saying, look, if the dollars aren't there in the state budget, everybody has to do their part, and that includes parks. But I think that the July 1 date was important this year because, you know, at least a handful of us said, this makes no sense. This is penny wise and pound foolish. It's a modest amount of money, and yet we're putting an extraordinary natural treasure and economic development tool at risk. But it will take, it has taken years to get to this sorry state, and it will take years to get us out of the sorry state. And that's why, you know, we call it sustainability, and is probably an overused word, but we called it a sustainable parks plan because we wanted to make it clear it wasn't a one-time bailout. It needs to be part of a longer-term effort to reclaim our state parks.
Well, Michael, I'll just say Lorna should be concerned.
Tracy Verrider Torres.
Because we already know that there is redwood poaching going on public lands up in Humboldt County right now. Not state parks, I don't believe at this point, but we have heard of that already on federal land. We discussed already the presence of illegal marijuana grows throughout the system, some in open parks now. There was actually a major bust at Topanga State Park down in Southern California, not on the closure list. And this is something we've seen in the Santa Cruz Mountains a lot, up in the Mendocino area. We know $30,000 worth of copper got stolen from Benicia State Capitol when it was technically open, as a matter of fact. And a copper pot got stolen from Petaluma Adobe, all irreplaceable, all impacting both the cultural resources and the natural resources. So this is of such high concern. This is why we are concerned about getting, whether it's volunteers from a traditional volunteer sense, as Rachel discussed, or this sort of higher caliber kind of expertise being lended to the cause, some funding from the state, perhaps some appropriate management from the private sector. This is why it's important to get people out there.
There's no, when we're talking about natural resources parks, there's no oil in these parks, is there? I know in Colorado they're getting revenue streams from drilling in the parks. I just wanted that on the record because Governor Schwarzenegger, well, when he was talking about off-coast drilling, it didn't quite go down well with California citizens. And there are people who are saying, well, let's tax the oil people, or maybe drill in the parks. No, it's not going to work. Let's go to your calls. In fact, let's go first to Mike, who's joining us from Oakland. Mike, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, and thanks for the opportunity. I called because I believe that our public park system is a national treasure that differentiates the United States, and I agree with Senator Simidian's statement that closing these parks is penny-wise and pound-foolish. So I suggest that the public has been conditioned to subscribe to monthly services by the Internet. I believe that significant numbers of people would subscribe to a monthly fee to support the parks, and I know I would.
What about that idea, Ruth Coleman? Maybe it's a time who's come. Monthly fee.
Sounds good to me. There was a measure that was put on the ballot, Prop 21, which gave voters an opportunity to spend $18 a year, and they would have been able to get into parks free all year round, and that actually did not pass. So it is one of those things as a voluntary measure. I think that sounds like it might be quite a possibility. I know that there are efforts to create license plates. Those work great as long as you can pre-sell 7,500 of them. And so all of these, I think, are really creative ideas that we ought to be exploring.
And we'll get some more calls on. We go to Vallejo. Pat, you're on the air with us. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning. I think that trying to save the parks is a good thing. However, that I would ask Senator Simidian to think about the unintended consequences that come from his proposal of trying to sweep the OHV grant program funds, because those funds go to local sheriffs, they go to local parks, and they help the Forest Service and BLM provide recreation on over 20 million acres in the state, which is a vast amount of acreage that's greater than what the state parks provide. And I think that taking money from perhaps the motor vehicle fund or borrowing money would be better than the unintended consequences that will come from taking money directly from the trust fund and decimating the grant program.
Senator Simidian.
A technical issue, but one that's obviously of importance to people who rely on those funds. Just to clarify for the listener and other listeners, for the caller rather, and other listeners, we ended up looking at the opportunity, the permission, if you will, for state parks to use up to about a sixth of the money that is in the off-highway vehicle program. There's been a lot of debate and discussion about this. We're not using their registration fees, which some folks had misunderstood. We're not sweeping, quote, the entire fund, which some people had misunderstood. And on this particular piece that the caller is mentioning, ultimately we heard what people said, and they made a very good case that a lot of the dollars that we were talking about went to programs that were a high priority, particularly for law enforcement. So we've restructured the flexibility that we want to give parks so that just a little less than half of the money we were talking about would still be there firmly available for those local program grants. And while I know that won't make everybody happy, I think it's a better outcome than the original proposal that we put on the table. And Michael, you know, you talked about this in the last hour when you talked about the budget. when, you know, the dollars are scarce, hard choices have to be made. In this case, we said, let's make part of the solution using some of these funds, but not put all of the burden on that particular source.
You'd be talking about borrowing $500 million over 5 years, and that would be from a clean water loan fund?
No. What we're talking about, actually, there are three different funding sources, and it gets a little we're down in the weeds now, but the first of the three sources was to say, look, we've got a clean water fund that is designed to make sure that septic systems and clean water systems are funded here in California. It's a revolving loan fund. Let's take a look at using about $10 million a year from that fund over the course of the next several years.
This would be for water and sewer repairs.
That's right. Yeah. And again, you know, the fund is for, the Clean Water Fund is for water and sewer infrastructure, so an appropriate use of appropriate funds. Then you referenced earlier, we had also suggested let's use $10 million from the motor vehicle account that had a $500 million surplus. Now, the irony is we got some pushback on that in part because a lot of that money, and I'm told it was $300 million, it may go up to $450 or more, is going to be borrowed by the state to deal with our general fund budget problem. And as I say, the irony is because we wanted $10 million a year to use for what it's supposed to be used for.
Which again is roads.
Yeah. And then the third piece, which is what your caller just talked about, is as part of the larger parks operation, there's an operation for off-highway vehicles. And, you know, I looked at that account as well, and we said, gosh, there's a surplus there. Could we use up to $21 million worth of flexibility to parks? It wasn't an outright allocation because what we wanted parks to do was look at all these other opportunities and then look at that $21 million and say, you make the judgment. Would you find it a higher priority to use it for off-highway purposes, or do you think there are other places in the park system that need the dollars more? That, of course, created the tension around, well, some of us want it for one thing and some of us want it for another.
I want to get another caller on. Marina, that's you. Marina, join us. You're on Forum. Good morning.
Hi. Yeah, I worked with a couple of students at UC Santa Cruz on a report recently, and we looked at policy decisions in the state of California in the last 10 years and how they were affecting the state parks. And specifically, we looked at how the concurrence of the Proposition 19 not passing and state park funding being cut at the same time is going to lead to a lot of problems with marijuana pot plantations being grown, which is already a large problem in the state. But we're going to have more dangerous situations for the few rangers that we do have, and we're also going to be having dangerous situations for those people who live around the parks who do go into the parks even without rangers around, because these plantations are, you know, have armed guards at them and are actually causing a lot of environmental damage with the pesticides that they use and those sorts of issues.
Yeah, let's hear from you on this, Tracy Verado-Torres, because you had alluded to before the marijuana growing.
Sure. Not the only problems facing state parks, but clearly a huge problem and one that gets a lot of visibility. I mean, we know, I mean, the department is part and has been for some time part of a task force with both state and national agencies trying to combat this problem. But clearly, you know, as Marina referenced, it was actually Prop 21, not Prop 19, but Prop 21's failure and the cuts in the state parks budget over time have led to a budget problem that creates a lack of enforcement, but also creates a lack of availability to all of the park space so that you don't actually have the, you know, we've already got trails closed, we've already got campgrounds closed, we've already got portions of parks closed, so you don't have the public eyes and ears that might serve as somewhat of a deterrent on that. But clearly big problem, as Marina said, from an environmental, from a policy, from a political issue. We are concerned it's going to get worse, particularly in areas of the state that we know this is a problem, and that's why we're working hard to get partners to keep these places open.
And again, Tracy Verado-Torres is Vice President for Government Affairs with the California State Parks Foundation. Let me read some of your emails and Twitter remarks. Here's a listener who writes, Robin writes, as a tie-in to Michelle Obama's Let's Move program, it's no longer safe for kids to run outside and play in our neighborhoods, making it so much more important these days to have a place to go for kids to get outside and get exercise. Another listener, Kelsey, says, I'm a full-time student and a full-time worker, and our state parks are my husband and my only destinations for our weekend vacations all year long. I hike every weekend, and our parks are primary form of exercise. Without them, well, what will I do every weekend? I don't mind paying fees. We don't charge visitors nearly enough or nearly enough of the time. This becomes a kind of recurrent theme here, if you will. Here's Phyllis, who says, I take my dog on wonderful hikes in the wilderness areas on U.S. Forest Service and BLM lands. I take my dog on hikes in the many parks of the East Bay Regional Park System. Dogs are not allowed on hikes in state parks. I say, close the state parks and quit spending my tax money on parks where we're not allowed. Want to comment, Ruth Coleman?
Both national and state parks are places where we try to create a refugia for wildlife, because the writer's correct that a lot of these other public lands that are multi-use do allow dogs. A dog has a smell that is considered a predator to all the other mammals, and it affects all of their behaviors. So we try to have a few places in the state of California where those other mammals have a place that they feel safer, and it isn't altering their behavior. And so those are your state and national parks.
And as a very dedicated and almost ardent dog lover, I must say that's a bit canine-centric. To think they won't allow us, so we can't go in. We're not going to go in. Here's another listener, right, who writes, privatization of many state and national park campgrounds is already well underway. It is necessary to reserve campgrounds through the concessionaire Reserve America, which no doubt takes a cut of reservation fees. Also, in that the people who answer the phones are at call centers and not in the parks, they operate according to a set of rules that do not necessarily reflect the reality on the ground. And here's the problem. A private company gets to make a profit through having the reservation concession, while the underfunded parks themselves are run largely by volunteers who actually know the parks and know the needs of visitors. Joe Simidian.
You know, I think if the conversation today has done nothing else, it I hope underscores the fact that there isn't.
Come on, it's done a lot.
What I was going to say is, if it's done nothing else, I hope it underscores the fact that there isn't a single answer. There isn't that silver bullet or quick fix that I referenced earlier. Do we want to privatize the parks? Of course we don't. But do we want to be smart and selective about where we look at different models? I think we should. It isn't that any one of these things is, quote, the answer. It's that, and that's why we had, 8 different elements in the plan that Senator Noreen Evans and I put forward, is we said none of these alone are going to get it done. We've all got to look at a wider array of different ways of working. And to the caller's point, I would just say, no, that's not the solution, but it is a part of a much wider array of solutions.
Let's get Kimberly in Pacifica on with us. Kimberly, join us.
Hi. I'd like to ask Senator Simidian, are you suggesting that the, quote, lower paid workers can replace, the ones that will replace the rangers, are they going to be non-union?
Don't know whether they'll be union or non-union. I do know that I think we probably don't need a fully trained, post-certified law enforcement official with naturalist expertise to take the parking fees or clean the bathrooms at state parks, that there are other folks who can do that work at a lesser cost by virtue of their lesser skills.
Thank you for the call. Kimberly, here's a listener named Ron who has a question for you, Ruth Coleman. He says, I went to Half Moon Bay State Park to buy an annual pass and was shocked to find that the Department of Parks was unable to accept credit cards. How on earth can you run a service-oriented agency in California in the 21st century without taking credit cards for significant fees and purchases?
Fair question, and that's one we're actually going to solve in the next few months. We have a project going forward to allow for credit cards. It also underscores the need for us to get a lot more of these pay machines out there that can take all forms of plastic. We have these Iron Rangers that we all charge maybe, say, $7, and nobody travels with $7 anymore. They either have a $20 bill from the ATM or they have plastic or a debit card. So we know we need to get much more advanced on our use of plastic.
You're going to be taking euros?
Well, and this
not
again,
planning to.
This again is part of what I call new ways of working. It isn't going to work if we sort of have the 10-20-year-old model in mind. And again, across a range of activities at the parks, new ways of working have to be part of the solution.
Here's Trish, who says, is there any way low-risk inmates could be put to work to earn their keep by helping with the labor needed to keep parks open?
We use them already. A lot of our trail construction is done with inmates, and so that is a source of labor that we've used in the past. We also like to use the California Conservation Corps, which they're not inmates. They are really remarkable young people who are getting good job training, and so that's another area where we like to try to use people. And so I think, as Senator Simonian said, there's no silver bullet. There's all kinds of good ideas, and we're trying to employ them all.
What's the status of your proposal, Joe Simonian?
Well, the proposal that Senator Evans and I put forward is going to be heard as part of a budget trailer bill. That's essentially a piece of legislation that trails the budget. Some of the trailer bills will be taken up tomorrow, Friday, on the floor of the state Senate. This particular one, I think, is likely to be heard sometime early or middle of next week. At least that's the current plan. And so far, the bulk of the proposal has remained intact. One source of funding was substituted for another in one case, but we're still looking at producing the same amount of revenue and moving forward on both the new ways of working, as I describe them, as well as the partnerships with the Parks Foundation and their local partners. So I am keeping my fingers crossed that it remains largely intact through next week and that we'll get a favorable vote in the legislature.
And we'll move forward with another of your calls. John, you're on. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hi. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I'm actually live adjacent to the Nicene Mark State Park, and it's not on the closure list. But one thing I've noticed up there is that there's a tremendous amount of trespassing and off-roading and vandalism, maybe people going up in the backside of the park and shooting. And I actually, my property is adjacent to that part of the park, and I've actually gotten, it's gotten so bad that I've gotten my own tractor to go up there and try to block people from getting up in there with their four-wheel drives and cutting down into private properties. And there's a massive problem with people dumping old cars up there, and it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And this is a park that's not on the closure list. And I guess the point that I like to make is I've offered to rangers to go up there and actually try to help clean the stuff out, and I've been denied to do that. It's like, it'd be nice if there'd be some more crowdsourcing and, you know, get some of the neighbors involved, the adjacent properties, to try to, you know, stem some of these problems before they get so bad that, you know, it's really expensive.
Well, I guess afraid of liability and vigilantism, all kinds of issues there. You want to comment for us, Tracy?
Well, not on the vigilante.
No.
But
no,
in general, I mean, John, sort of the concept that you were talking about, crowdsourcing, we at the foundation have launched a new program, the Park Champions Program, to try to put new volunteer teams together. So largely this comes out of, you know, it sounds a little more unfortunate than most of the situations we get, but comes out of a situation where somebody locally says, I'm in a park, I see some needs, I've got some friends, I'm willing to recruit more. Hey, can you, the foundation, help me, give us some training? We train crew leaders and we try to basically empower communities.
Why don't you let them know how to get in touch with you?
So come to our website, John, at calparks.org, look for the Park Champions Program, and we'll get in touch with you.
And I want to thank you, as well as the other panelists here, for an hour that I really do think was quite enlightening and important. Thank Ruth Coleman, Director of California State Parks, Joe Simonian, State Senator from Palo Alto, Democrat, Sustainable Parks Proposal, currently part of the budget package, and Tracy Virado-Torres as Vice President for Government Affairs with the California State Parks Foundation. Also thanks to Rachel Miro, California Report host and reporter, and thanks to you, our listeners. We would not be here without you and appreciate your listenership. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Thanks also to our Senior Editor, Dan Zoll, and to our producers, Judy Campbell and Vinnie Fong. Our engineers are Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman. Our executive producer, Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.